All right. So let's turn back over to evidence of design. It should be the next page that hasn't been filled out. I think it may be page 10 of yours.
Page
8.
Page
7.
Page 7.
Okay. So here we are. In order to determine our level of justification for the conclusion that the cause is a personal agent, the cause of the universe, we appeal to design. We are now interested in whether the cause is intelligent, so we examine the complex universe to see if it reveals intelligence behind it. If so, then we have further reason to think that the cause is a personal being. Okay? So if there is intelligence behind the universe, we have more cause to think that the what is behind, or the cause that is behind the universe, is a personal being. Arguments from design begin with the essential cosmic constants. And these are just some fascinating constants and things that have to be in place for us to exist, or this universe to exist as it is. So you guys,
Hey.
I mean,
yeah, we haven't
pulled out 7 yet. Really?
The
cause of your personal being. The cause of your personal being, it's out of order. We talked about Thomas Aquinas, right? Mm-hmm. Let's see what page 7 says. All right. Okay, so page 7 of yours is what you're on? Wow.
Maybe it should be page 8.
Hmm. Yeah, that is a necessary page. I wonder why it's not in my notes here. Ah, there it is. Never mind. Okay. All right. So before all the stuff I just said, the conclusion that the beginning of the universe was cause suggests that the cause must be something independent of it, leaving us to seek out the nature of this cause. So we have two options, an agent or an event or an agent, and so we need to clearly define those. First of all, an event. If an event caused the beginning of the universe, then we might wonder what caused that event, since all events have causes. If the cause is another event, we enter a regress until that the cause is not an event. And so what we have here is an infinite regress. Again, we've talked about this. So if an event caused the beginning, well, then we ask the question, what caused that event that caused the beginning? And so it just begs the question and keeps moving it backwards. If it's an agent can initiate a chain of events without a prior cause, providing a probable form of causation connected with a beginning. And we experience this on a daily basis, okay? Take an example of anybody play billiards or pool, okay? What you have is, the end result is a ball goes in a pocket, okay? But we want to see what caused that. Well, we go back and a cue ball hit that ball. Well, that's an event. Then we move back and we say, well, a cue hit the cue ball. Well, that's an event. And so we have to move back to what initiated this series of events. Well, it's an agent. And that would be the person using the cue would be considered the agent. And so what maybe we need to talk about first is, what is agency? In order to identify the nature of the cause, we begin with three basic premises. First of all, human beings have not caused their own existence, and therefore are effects. Effects. Two, a sufficient cause must explain every effect. Something never comes from nothing, so there must be a sufficient cause. Three, humans exist as personal agents. And there's five things that are involved with agency, and I think you have five blanks there. The first one is consciousness. Consciousness. And you might put on the side there, consciousness is simply defined as self-awareness or awareness. So an agent or something possessing agency has consciousness or self-awareness. Two, rationality. They can process and formulate ideas. An agent is rational. Number three, intention. They can purpose their own. They can they're willful. They're volitional. Okay, they have intentionality. They intend to do things. Purpose is one's own. They have causal power. They're able to perform tasks. They have causal power. Causal power. They can perform tasks. And there's a sense of freedom. So I would put freedom there. Now this is, we don't want to enter into a debate of God's sovereignty versus man's free will. Freedom, what we're talking about here is agents experience that they're not bound to do certain things. They're not forced to do things. They have the freedom to get up at a certain time. They have the freedom to go to bed at a certain time. Does that make sense? Okay, so not trying to avoid the debate on sovereignty versus man's free will. Freedom in the sense of agency. That's one of the characteristics, okay? So any questions about that? Consciousness, they have self-awareness, rationality, intention, causal power, and freedom. So we're looking at two forms of causation, event causation or agent causation. Now we've established there is a beginning, and we've established that the beginning has a cause. So we're now asking the question, was that cause an event or an agent? Okay, now the argument. If humans are effects, then the nature of humans is dependent upon their sufficient cause. Human beings are effects, human beings are personal agents in nature. Therefore, the sufficient cause of human agency must also be a personal agent. Basically, since we are personal beings, our cause must also be a personal being. Okay? And so it gets into, since we are an effect, okay, so we bear the same attributes, in a sense, as that which caused us. Okay? There's another statement that goes along the lines of, something can't bestow a quality that it does not itself have. So we can't come from an impersonal being that can bestow personality. Does that make sense? Okay. Kathy, are you processing? Okay. Questions?
I don't even know questions to ask.
Okay. Basically, since we are personal beings, our cause must also be a personal being. Since we possess agency, our cause must also possess agency. Since we possess consciousness, rationality, intention, causal power, and a sense of freedom, that which caused us must also possess those in order to bestow those. Okay?
I'm not so convinced that somebody that believes in the Big Bang would see why that has to be.
Okay. Well, the question that's being begged there is the Big Bang is an event, right?
Yeah.
So that's event causation. So the question is still vague. Where did the things come from that caused that event? Because we have never experienced in our life or in existence events not being caused by something else. And so we go to that infinite regress that an event caused an event, like the billiards example. Okay? If you're going to say the cue hitting the cue ball is the Big Bang, well, what moved the cue? What? The only explanation that's rational would be an agent, something that possessed those qualities, must have enacted that event, because that also is an event. So infinite regress is going to be the big topic you're going to want to hit on when somebody brings up Big Bang. Well, what about the Big Bang? And great, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk about the Big Bang. Let's see if that's really rational. And you can talk about events, every event. And you can talk about today, all events occur because something caused them. There is no event that does not have a cause.
And so you say, is the Big Bang an event? Well, of course it is. It's a thing happening. So if it's a thing happening, it's an event, then there has to be a cause for it, because we don't have any experience or evidence to suggest that events don't have causes. Right? If we're going to base it solely on the evidence, we don't have any evidence to suggest that an event is somehow uncaused. It just happens. There's always something that causes it. So they have to then conclude, okay, they have to concede a point to you if they're going to remain rational. If they're going to remain stubborn and prideful, they might go around and around and find some other way to mess with it. But so then we say, okay, if it's not an event, there's only one other option. It's an agent causation. And the billiards example I've always found is a very useful example in discussing this, because it shows very clearly how events are happening in a certain timeline. And you can move back and see that an event led to an event that led to an event that, there's not an event that started the events. It's something outside of the events. And it was an agent. Yes, Jeff?
Included in that argument that something cannot bestow a quality it doesn't have, is that in part because as a human we couldn't give something a quality that we don't have because we wouldn't know that quality? Am I reasoning that right?
You mean we couldn't create a quality that we don't already know? Like we can't create something new or an attribute in something? Is that what you're saying? Because
sort of,
it's unknown to us?
Yeah. I mean, is that part of that?
I guess it could play into it, but I would also think that there would be no origin for a new quality to come from, because there's no... I mean, I guess you could mix two qualities and that somehow produces...
Awareness of it.
What's that?
Because there would be an awareness of that quality.
Right.
That created.
And I've... People have said, well, like some of my students were like, what about computers? We create computers. We form them, and they don't bear our attributes or our qualities. They're not themselves agents because we are agents. And that's true. I think the thing that we need to look at is these qualities of agency aren't physical. This idea of consciousness, rationality, intention, causal power, freedom, these are metaphysical qualities. And so we look around in the universe, and there's nothing else that bears those qualities that could have bestowed them upon us that would have also evolved with those qualities. Right? And so the source of those couldn't be physical. The source of those qualities aren't found in a physical universe outside of us. So they cannot... So we didn't come from the trees. We didn't come from the dirt. Something else bestowed those qualities on us that has to have those qualities, because... I'm trying to think of a good example. Can anyone think of a good example?
Intellectual capacity and emotion.
Okay. I'm trying to think in the process. Like yesterday, we went down to Denver and saw Nettie, Doug Weiler, and her new baby girl. And we weren't going in there wondering what qualities that baby would have. We knew the baby would resemble a human. We weren't looking to see like a Tonka truck or something. I mean, we knew it was going to have certain qualities. And we knew it's not going to have qualities that Nettie doesn't have as far as capacities, you know, for reason and that kind of stuff, because it came from Nettie. It would share the qualities and attributes, the non-physical attributes of Nettie, right? I don't know if I'm explaining this very well. I see a lot of blank looks.
Well, how would you explain the computer again? We'd be creating a computer, but what attributes does it have of the creator?
Well, I think in a very, it only bears the information that we put it. Okay, it can only have what we give it, and so it can't create its own information unless an agent causes it to have that information.
An agent has to input.
Right.
It has rational processes, but there's a limit.
Right. Well, and those processes are the exact same processes that we use as humans.
Mm-hmm.
The zeros and the ones to make up some calculation
or an image or something like that. There was I think at MIT, there was a robot head that they made called Kismet. Have you ever heard of this? And it was basically like, have you seen Short Circuit, that old movie. Okay, Johnny Five is alive times him. Well, it looked like that head, and it had like little metal eyes and eyebrows and a mouth and stuff like that. And the way that it operated is they were trying to create a robot or a computer that had emotions, that could feel. The interesting thing was they had to program all the emotions into it. And it had these reservoirs of sensory perception. And so if it perceived movement or sound, all of these kind of waves, light waves, sound waves, it would, if depending on the frequency of the sound waves or the light and the speed of it and the amount of it, then it would fill up the reservoirs at a certain rate. And it was programmed, if it was filled, if it saw too much movement, it would begin, and as the reservoir filled, it would show excitement and happiness. If it continued, it would show irritation. If it continued even further, it would get angry. Okay, and it would show that in the little mechanical features on it. Likewise, if it saw movement, and so a little spike happened in the reservoir, and then nothing happened for a while, it would show the signs of curiosity. It would show the signs then of loneliness, and then of sadness, and eventually, if it could cry, it would cry. But it was all based on humans programming that at a certain level, you should feel this way, and you should feel this way. It wasn't it contriving its own emotional feelings. It was just acting according to programs and certain stimuli that came in at certain rates. And so, you know, yeah, it's just running programs that are initiated by an agent. Making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
I think on the going back to the Big Bang, I think whoever brought that question up. I mean, I don't think they're going to concede that point real easy. You know, they're going to say, well, they are going to say it happened by chance, mm-hmm. and they're going to bank on it, and they're going to and they'll say, well, that's why they keep on pushing it back farther. Well, if it happened 20 billion years ago, mm-hmm. possible.
Well, and and some of that's pride. Some of that's they're not willing to concede that point. They're very, and then you can bring up the idea. Well, if there was a Big Bang, it was a physical explosion. Where did the physical matter come from? That I mean, we haven't experienced matter that continues for infinity. So where would that come from? And it's just that regress, that infinite regress. That you can appeal to that, but if they're not going to listen to reason, then
well, time is the magic wand by which all things are possible. That's how they look at it. If you throw enough time at it,
right,
then the impossible becomes possible.
Mm-hmm. And then when we get into cosmological constants, like all of these things had to happen in a certain way, and the probability of it happening in the other way is very just astronomical. And their classic just slam against that is, well, it doesn't matter. We're here. And so they just negate all of the probability that it would take for this to exist the way it does. All right. And one of the things that we're going to talk about, too, in future classes is the three category of reasons people reject the gospel eventually. And it's either willful, emotional, or intellectual. So they're barriers to the gospel can fall into one of those three categories. And we're going to talk about this in future classes. And so, in what we're talking about here with the whole Big Bang theory is it's oftentimes a willful, they just don't want to not believe it. Whether you throw all the evidence, all the arguments at them, and you're addressing their intellectual barriers, at the end of the day, maybe a willful thing, but they just don't want to stop sinning.
Because the alternative is God, and they don't believe in
Him. Exactly, and that would change. They would have to change the way they live their life, and they don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So, we have to recognize that too. All right. So Norman Geisler emphasizes a cause cannot communicate to its effect only what it has. If the effect actually possesses some characteristic, then this characteristic is properly attributed to its cause. Okay. So since a cause cannot give what it does not have to give, then the cause of agency must itself be an agent. And that's something we just talked about.
Sorry, sort of along the same lines. What about the sin nature, though? Because as humans, we're sinful by nature, and our agent, creator, is not. How do you
think
that character?
I think that We have to identify that in our origins, Adam and Eve were created, in effect, sinless. And in giving us agency, there was the option to sin or not to sin. In our freedom, there was the option to sin or not to sin. And so I think that is the result of, you know, being an agent. We had that option.
And it's a result of his perfect holiness. There has to be an oppositeness, even though he possessed no sin. Because in perfection of holiness, that's an acknowledgement of something that's not there, which is sin. So sin is part of an agent, part of a effect of his holiness.
That it has to exist to recognize holiness?
Yeah.
But I would argue that's not always going to be the case. I think eventually we're going to be in a sinless state, and we're not going to need sin in order to recognize His holiness. But I think an answer to your question is, I think there was originally we did bear a sinless nature like our Creator, but given our freedom and the temptation and the Garden of Eden and all that kind of stuff.
We, as in Eve, did.
Right.
Not you. Not me.
But we bear the sin nature.
Absolutely.
Right. So humanity, in a sense, is that. Does that make sense? Okay. I think that would be the response.
I mean, you would want to direct your argument that if someone had anger about God created a sinful creature, when God created man and woman, they were sinless. Mm-hmm. And then when they sinned, that attribute thereafter has been passed down to us.
Mm-hmm. It's that the origin of evil, if, you know, good God.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Both in an inherited sense and in an imputed sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's people that struggle with, well, I'm not Adam and I'm not Eve, and do you believe that God created me individually? Then why wouldn't I be created sinless until I had a chance to sin? And there's some Christians out there that feel we are sinless until we enact our first sin. And that we are pure and undefiled until we take the first toy or tell our first lie or have our first bad thought.
Because with toddlers, that's about when I have.
And so... And no one really had to teach him that, did they? I mean, you guys weren't sitting down, okay, we're going to teach you how to be evil now. Like, that never happened. It's part of their nature.
Well, even but at one day, a baby is selfish. It cries until it gets what it wants or needs.
That's not selfishness. That's their communication.
So, all right.
Okay, since a cause cannot give what it does not have to give, then the cause of agency must itself be an agent. So, whatever caused us, if it is a personal being, it must be an agent, because it couldn't make agents and not be an agent itself. Okay? The cause may possess much more, but not less than its effect. Does that make sense? An agent for the cause may possess much more than we do, but it can't possess less than we do. And I was talking in my theology class with the high school students this week, and we've been studying the communicable attributes and the incommunicable attributes of God. Communicable attributes being the things that we can also possess, like God. Incommunicable are the things that only God has that we can never have. Omniscience, omnipotence, eternality, those type of things are the attributes that we are never privy to, that we don't get. That's an example of the Creator having more than we have, but not less than we have. Okay. Just as something cannot come from nothing, neither can consciousness, rationality, freedom come from a cause which lacks those attributes. Okay. We can't somehow have consciousness, freedom, causal power, those type of things, and our cause not. Okay, they don't come from nothing. They come from something that gives us those attributes. It necessarily follows. Make sense?
Is that just a rule of logic? I mean,
It's something, it's a rule of logic, and it's also experiential. Okay? Now, because we've never... In Scripture it talks about you don't plant a seed and a fig tree grow up and you expect to pull anything but figs from it. You're not going to pull apples from a fig tree. It's going to bear the fruit of the seed of where it comes from. It's going to have the attributes of that which, you know, it came from. And so likewise, just like something can't come from nothing, there can't be nothingness and then something sprout out of it. There can't be a blob of whatever here, and all of a sudden consciousness and freedom and causal power come out of this thing, and that's just that by accident came out. Whatever, if we possess certain attributes, they have to have come from somewhere. But it gets kind of messy when, like Molly was talking about the sin. Well, then that necessarily follows that, you know, sin didn't just come out of nowhere. It came from somewhere. So did God give that to us? But it sprung out of freedom. We had the freedom to obey or disobey. If that makes sense. So, and I would say that sin is not like it's not a characteristic like consciousness or causal power. It seems as though it's a defect. If that makes sense. Those things are like, for instance, this TV. This TV, it is created with certain functions. It has the potential to do all of these button things. And I would say sin would be an aftermarket defect in these buttons or something like that. Does that make sense? So it's the consciousness, freedom, causal power, those are things like our buttons that we were designed with. We were pre-made. This is what we had. Sin, with Adam and Eve, it was an aftermarket, someone dropped it, and now all of a sudden this plug doesn't work anymore type of thing. Does that make... That's a bad example, I think. Because sin affects everything.
I have a question. On these five characteristics of personal agency, on freedom, we're saying that God gave us freedom, which is freedom to sin. Therefore, God must also have freedom to sin?
Well, he doesn't have the freedom to sin because he can't be any other way than he is.
But then how could Jesus be tempted?
Because he was
a
man.
But he wasn't a man, he was God.
He was 100%
above.
I understand Jesus, but just going back to God, I never thought of God as having the freedom.
Have the potential. Well, when we're talking about freedom, too, we're talking about volition or choice. So we choose to do things. We will to do things. We decide to do things. And God, you know, obviously it seems has the same ability to choose and will things. He is perfect, and I think that it's that discussion of a creator can have more than its creation, but not less. And I think in the more category of it, God, in all of his attributes, in his perfect essence, he can't be any other way than he is. He can't not be holy. He can't not be pure. He can't not do right things. Righteousness is him. And so I think that that's the difference in that we're limited in our ability and our discernment and our understanding, whereas his is perfect. So does God have the ability to sin? I'd say no, because if he did have the ability to sin, then he wouldn't be God by definition.
Oh, I
would negate. I guess I'm trying to... Does that satisfy...
I agree, because if I was arguing against you, I would say, well, he gave us the freedom to sin, but he can't give us anything that he himself doesn't have, so then he must be able to sin.
The freedom to sin.
I agree with you.
You're talking ideologically.
Yeah, I could see some arguing that one. I could see some
I think the reason why we begin to entertain, and that becomes like, well, that could possibly happen, because I think we have a very limited understanding of God. I think there's an understanding of God's holiness and his essence that we just, I don't think, can fully grasp.
We can't comprehend anything without limits.
Right.
And he has that perfection, purity, and holiness without limits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but also, that's what I think. If he had the freedom to sin, which I believe he had freedom, he could give us freedom. But But he has perfect knowledge of everything past and everything forward, so he would know not to sin. And we sin usually because we don't understand, A, what that'll do for us, B, what we really need, C, you know, but he understands everything. He's perfectly...
And I think we're trying to think of this in a way that there's a standard that even God himself has to live up to. He is the standard. There's not this laundry list of things to do and not to do that he himself is subject to. He is that. I mean, just by his existing. It's as much as I exist as a male, he exists as God and can't be any other way. Now, obviously, science could make me not a male, but let's not get into that. So that example. But and this is a discussion we had in class one time, was, are things good because God does them, or does God do them because they are good?
It's like, do we sin because we're sinners, or are we sinners because we sin?
And the response that I always give is that there's not this this standard that's existed for all time and all eternity that God, you know, checks every day, have I done this, this, and this? Am I walking the right way? And he just has the power to do that. No, the standard is him. He looks at himself.
This is just an interesting argument that I recently read about and some for us to chew on. We don't necessarily discuss it, but... You know, I've been part of discussions or teaching, you know, or talking, did God create sin? Did God create evil? I recently read about an argument that that sin and evil are absence of God. And using that argument, God cannot be absent of himself, and therefore could not sin or be evil.
Right.
So that's just an interesting.
There was a hand up over here.
Yeah, what about the angels? They were created with the freedom also, right?
Well, they're a different being than we are, so they don't necessarily bear the image of God in the sense that we do. It's clear in Scripture that they're a different type of being, and it appears that they too have freedom to obey or disobey, and that's where we have the result of fallen angels and the like. So, in the sense, but are they agents? Well, the question then would be, if Satan eventually was originally an angel, does he have agency? Does he have the ability? Is he self-aware? Is he rational, intentional? Does he have the ability to act? It seems that way. I mean, Scripture gives the evidence that yes, he does bear the characteristics of agency. So he too is an agent. Therefore, I would conclude the angels are agents in the same way. We have a distinguished guest with us this morning. Professor Newland has decided to join us.
I'm just auditing and reviewing, just observing. See how you do.
Thanks. All right. So, any other questions about agency? That was a great question, Molly. I'm glad that, I mean, we were entertaining the question. We're talking about agency, that we possess the characteristics we do because God also possesses certain characteristics, and he cannot possess any less than we have, but he can possess more. And the question, and we were looking at characteristics of agency being consciousness, rationality, intention, causal power, and freedom. And Molly brought up a great point that if we too have freedom, volition, choice, and we go back to Adam and Eve, and they volitionally chose to eat, to disobey. Does God have the freedom to sin? Is the timely question. So, do you have any off the top of your head?
Right off the top of my head.
Right, just shoot from the hip there.
Well, it's like saying, is God so big that you can make a stone that you cannot lift?
Can't lift.
So it would be a categorical fallacy.
Is that our answer to everything?
That would have worked for a lot of them.
He cannot sin even with free will or free choice. I should say. Free will actually applies to him because there is no sin in his life for him to to draw him away to do anything other than to do things that are holy or righteous.
Perfect.
So is there things that God can't do? Yes. He cannot be untrue to himself.
Yeah, or are there things God cannot do?
Right.
Being all powerful.
Sure. Right.
He can't stop being God.
Right. He cannot be untrue to himself. And therefore, I don't believe he can sin.
Well, we know it's impossible for God to lie. It's in the scriptures.
I believe that Jesus
could
sin. I think when he was on the earth, it was possible for him to sin. That was the whole point of the test.
Him being the second Adam. But God, I thought there's a question regarding God himself.
We got to Jesus, but then we went back to God.
Okay. Okay.
But we're Trinitarian too. So.
All right. So just as something cannot come from nothing, neither can consciousness, rationality, or freedom come from a cause which lacks those attributes. Okay. If this did happen, then basically those attributes have come out of nothing. And that's what we're kind of sprung some of this. Why? Well, this would require consciousness to come from the non-conscious and rationality from the non-rational. But matter is irrational. Okay, it's incapable of thought and therefore cannot serve as the sufficient cause of rationality. It is also determined rather than free. Matter simply reacts. Okay, it doesn't act on its own. It simply reacts to things. For instance, the snow is matter. It's falling, but it's not falling by choice, because something, certain temperatures and what have you, gravity, things are causing it. It's simply reacting to outside forces. A tree, when it is cut, it falls not because it wants to, because something outside of it has acted upon it. So matter doesn't contain rationality or intentionality. It doesn't contain will. Matter does not contain those things. So immaterial substance is where that comes from. And so since we...
No, go ahead.
Well, I just want to clarify. So that statement under Geisler, just as something cannot come from nothing, neither can consciousness, etc. Is that an attribute, or is that a characteristic of the logic we're using, or where does that state? Where does that? How do we define?
What's the
that
basis statement? Of that?
Yeah.
I think it's this, in that if we consider consciousness coming from nothing, we would be saying consciousness, non-consciousness. It comes from rationality, comes from non-rationality, because if it's coming from nothing, well, it's the same argument we use something can't come from nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing comes from nothing.
Because that's absolutely what an evolutionist would say, is that at some point the monkey became a human and had consciousness.
Right. And they're going to argue this, that matter contains those things. But they need to establish that if we're going to be a scientist, what about the evidence? And they have to provide evidence that matter contains these non-physical characteristics, rationality, consciousness. Matter isn't self-aware. This table here is not aware that it's a table. It's not aware that it's here. It doesn't have the capacity for that. And they would say, well, how do you know? The evidence. There's nothing to suggest that that's the case. Remember, we're going to use their tools against them. Okay, they're all about evidence. Well, there's no evidence to suggest this is self-aware, rationality, or the freedom to sit here. If it wanted to go over there, could it go over there? No. It has to be right here, because it's determined by outside forces. Matter is always determined and not free. Okay, it's irrational. It's a yes.
Just a thought that hit me. A lot of our movies, in particular children's movies, make items come alive that aren't alive.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. To help train our kids to cut.
Personification.
Mm-hmm. And so, this idea that, I mean, evolutionists would definitely argue that at some point, the monkey thought. At some point, matter began to do that. But what about matter has consciousness? Okay? I have consciousness. I am exhibiting consciousness. I'm self-aware. But if I get a haircut, part of me is gone if I'm simply purely material being. Right? Yet I can still think as rationally and consciously as I could before. If I get my arm lopped off, okay, I'm missing a very large part of me. Am I any less conscious? Am I any less rational? Do I have any less the ability to choose things?
And does your arm on its own have that?
Does it contain those attributes as well? If it's a part of me and I'm purely a collection of matter put together, okay? They would argue we're like car engines, okay? But if I take a vital piece out, if I take some spark plugs out, it's still going to fire, still going to do its thing. If you take pieces of me off, I may still fire, I may still do my thing, but I'm not going to lose essential attributes of myself. And so they can't be contained in matter because my arm's not going to be aware, my hair's not aware that it's not a part of me anymore if I'm purely matter. So, okay. Also, what about matter has intentionality? Okay, does my hair intend to fall off? It just does whatever it does. And whatever forces outside of it act upon it. Okay. So this conclusion, does that make sense, Jeff?
Yeah.
Like, what's the basis? Well, it's talking about something coming from nothing yet again. And it's just using different subjects. So this conclusion leaves two basic options. The cosmic environment, or the universe, possesses the attributes of agency, inherently, as well as physical characteristics, density and mass. And two, all agents separate from the universe exist as the sufficient cause of the agents that are in the universe, or the agency that exists within the universe. In order to avoid these conclusions, the naturalist or the atheist must take the position, the attributes of agency which humans seem to experience are actually an illusion. Emotions and choices are merely part of a cause and effect chain of events. And there was an atheist, and he was a behaviorist, by the name of Biedner. You guys heard of this guy? And he created what was called the air conditioner. And it's H-E-I-R, the air conditioner. Okay. And basically it was a clear box. And he actually put his daughter in this. And he put her in there, I think, for like the first 3 or 4 years of her life. And he felt that as a behaviorist, if I can control the stimuli and the environment that somebody is exposed to, I can create them to be good, purely good. That we're only bad, and we only do bad things and things because of the environment we're in, and this environment is making us bad. It's like Frankenstein. Frankenstein was a good, happy monster until his society was being mean to him, and then he became bad. And that's what the behaviorists and the atheists are going to say. So B.F. Skinner, he lived it out. You know, kudos for him that he lived his worldview out and actually, you know, I'm going to practice what I preach. He said, the environment makes us bad, so I'm going to control the environment of my daughter. And he sold, I think, six hundred of these things. Air conditioners. And for people to put their babies in and their kids in, and they would let them out to go to the bathroom and that kind of stuff. But then they were made to stay in this box so no bad stimuli could get to them. But yet they still turned out sinners. Right? And so
Over Child Protective Services.
and so that's what the naturalist is going to say, is that it's a cause and effect chain of events. We do bad things because somewhere down the line there was something bad done to us, or we were exposed to something, and so they're going to rationalize that it's not that our emotions and our choices are just cause and effect, that we don't have. Then we don't have rationality or intentionality.
So, did he end up becoming like a believer?
No.
What did he say? How did he rationalize that? Why his child still did naughty things?
He probably just, you know, said I didn't make it strict enough. He probably identified himself as bringing bad stimuli into the equation or something like that. But they need to rationalize everything as a physical process. And so things that appear like consciousness, that kind of stuff, is purely physical, chemical reactions occurring in the brain. Okay. Any thoughts about that? All right. Okay. However, if... I have a side note. I don't know if I'm going to share it enough. Okay. However, if one understands the agency to be real aspects of the experience of being a human rather than illusions, then the cause begins to look a lot like a person, right? Because we said that we can't have
since we are an effect, we can't have something more than our whatever cause this has. And so it can't have less than we do. All right. Okay, we're going to get as far as we can through this evidence of design, and then we'll next week. In order to determine our level of justification for the conclusion that the cause is a personal agent, we appeal to design. All right, we are now interested in whether the cause is intelligent, so we examine the complex universe to see if it reveals intelligence behind it. And so how many of you have ever kind of got into the idea of the cosmos and read apologists and that kind of stuff about certain things having to be certain ways and probabilities and different things like that? We're going to look at some things today, and so you can just have these as part of your repertoire. Arguments from design begin with the essentials, the cosmic constants. The planet's atmosphere must possess the right gases, water-forming compounds, either a smaller average distance between stars or more than one star in a planetary system would result in a tidal interactions, which would destabilize planetary orbits. A 2% difference in a planet's distance from its star, either direction, would render it incapable of sustaining life due to unstable water cycles. The mass of the parent star, if greater, its luminosity would change too quickly and it would burn too rapidly. If less, UV radiation would be inadequate for plants to produce sugars and oxygen. Do you have the note there that number 3 and 4 alone eliminate 99.9% of stars which fail to meet the necessary conditions? Well, numbers 3 and 4, so the last two, alone eliminate 99.9% of the stars that we know of which fail to meet necessary conditions for sustaining life. So 99.9% of the stars. Planets must have the right level of surface gravity. Planets must possess just the right crust thickness, the right level of carbon dioxide in atmosphere, the right quantity of oxygen in atmosphere, and atmosphere's ozone level. If greater, surface temperature would be too less, surface temperature and UV radiation would be too high. So the structure of the planetary system includes many conditions which are sensitive to any alterations. This factor, combined with the order which prevails in the universe, leaves the impression that the conditions serve as a means to the end of human life. So it seems as though the conditions that are necessary are intended for us to live. Okay? We better adapt to these conditions so we can survive. It seems as though that these conditions are intended for our existence and our living. In other words, in the words of Dr. William Lane Craig, the incredible complex and delicately balanced nexus of initial conditions necessary for intelligent life seems most plausibly explained if the nexus is the product of intelligent design. Okay. Any comments or observations about some constants?
To me, this strikes me as really odd when the expeditions to Mars and whatever, one tiny thing like a ripple here or there, oh, there must have been water, there must have been life. When there's this kind of a percentage, you know, it just, mm-hmm. you look at that and you go, no, it couldn't happen because of this kind of percentages. You know, with one little tiny echo, there was water, there was life, you know.
And scientists and NASA are all searching for another place we could go that would be life-sustaining, and they keep running into dead ends, and they can't find that place. And it doesn't dawn on them that this may be a pretty unique planet.
Yeah.
This may have a specific purpose. You know, and I don't know if it ever crosses their mind or not, but they keep running into dead ends. Okay, we're going to look at the argument from order. All features of the universe which indicate order, such as the conditions of planetary systems, the laws of nature, and DNA, appeal to our curiosity and lead to the question, what is the source of order itself? Or why does order exist at all? Why is there such order in the universe and even in our bodies, such as DNA? The options seem to be that it is either the result of chance or intelligence. Okay, we know intelligence is, as we see it, cause order every day. For instance, in our lives, order occurs because it is caused by intelligent beings, right?
If you go out to a junkyard, or what's that place on the way to Grammy? I have yet to see a car just sitting there long enough compose itself back into a pristine running automobile. Okay, it would only occur if intelligence acted upon it and caused it to be that way. Okay,
so intelligence is an option in the order that we find in the universe, because we see intelligence as the explanation for the order we see on our planet here today. Okay. To suggest chance caused order appeals to an orderliness or coincidence. Order is not a characteristic of chance, meaning that the cause would have to give something it does not have. Okay? That means if the process by which order came into our DNA and into the planetary system, it would then, if the cause was by chance, order isn't a quality of chance. It's not a byproduct of chance. So it would be bestowing something it does not have. Okay? Because it came about by chance, it would be bestowing a characteristic that it does not have, which is order. Okay? If chance is the source of order, then it has caused something contrary to itself. Assuming no order exists, it requires chance to cause something which is contradictory to itself. That's what we just said. Order by chance would be order without reason and for no purpose. But order is purposeful and is not random. It is necessary. So again, this appeals to our everyday experience. We don't see order existing somewhere and think it's just, well, that's neat. It's in order. Has anyone ever heard of William Paley's The Watchmaker? Okay. And basically the story is a guy's walking along, and he sees on this dirt path or on the beach or something, he sees a rock, and he identifies this rock and looks all the intricate stuff like that, and then he keeps walking and he picks up a watch. And he sees the intricate design of the watch, and he doesn't think the watch came about in the same way that the rock does. Because he sees, wow, there's a purpose. So it has a reason, it has a way that it operates, it was intentioned, and it's composed by order. So it must have a purpose. And so what people are arguing to say, if we came about by chance, it would be that chance came about, or order came about by chance, and for some reason it just happens to work out for us, but it had no purpose or intention in working the way that it does. It just happens to work that way. And aren't we lucky? Right? The fact that our DNA does certain things, the fact that, just even the process of as we've been watching our baby grow and the different things that have to take place in order for him to live, it's just fascinating. And it's like, if this was all by chance, we are really lucky. You know, we are supremely lucky that it works out for us time and time again. Thus, if order is not by chance, then its source would be non-random. And as a result, there would be reason to think intelligence has brought about order.
Yes, is there something that exists in the sort of order argument called irreducible complexity?
We're going to talk about that next week.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. I think that's very powerful.
Yeah,
it's definitely necessary for our discussion. And that's what Michael Behe, that's his big thing. He saw a flagellum and its motor. So anyway, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay, so are we understanding why chance can't produce, it's not rational that chance produces order? Does that make sense? Because everywhere we experience order, it's for a purpose and has a reason for why it is the way it is. Okay? And we experience that on a daily basis. We wouldn't somehow walk out into the forest and see a metal frame structure with a roof and go, can you believe evolution? That is amazing. And it starts to snow or blizzard, and now we can go there. Man, we lucked out. This thing is blocking the wind for us and the snow. This is so lucky. No, we would say it's metal, it's structured, it's framed, the roof is this way, things are sliding off it. This must be intentioned this way. We wouldn't ever assume that it was accidental. We see things in life with order and purpose. We never assume accidents produce that or chance produce that. Okay, and that's the big appeal there. Okay, we're going to stop there, and because we're going to talk about the argument from probability next week and irreducible complexity. Any questions?
Professor Newell, anything to add? Bless us with today.
I just was thinking as you're talking about the man-made objects, I was flying with my son 3 days cross country in a little airplane, drilled it down real low to the ground, and it's amazing how when you're going along you see nothing but natural vegetation, mountains, geology, and all that. As soon as there's something that has order, your eyes go right to it, and it's
so like any straight line across
straight
line,
the whole series
the
of straight lines, and it's almost like sometimes it could be geological or something that happened from rain, but when it's really pure straight, it's like it's hard to escape that effect that you said earlier. The natural reaction is wow, just chances. It's so fun to see the, how much luck can occur. I would like to have those odds.
Yeah,
you know. And,
but you assume civilization must be similar near here.
Yeah.
There must be humans nearby.
We had to do that because
that field is square.
A lot of times we had to figure out where we're going to put that airplane. If it, something near somebody civilized.
Well, that would be good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks to those of you who wrote papers. I hope it was fun and educational and challenging. And I'll try to avoid too many of those. And don't want to challenge you too much.